To Over, beginning of Debbie's report with Rick after supper this Wednesday, the 28th of February, 73. Channel 2, her third report on Ms. Nealon. Channel 2 Over, and the beginning of the visit with Debbie's report after supper with Rick this Wednesday, the 28th of February, 73. Channel 2 Over, beginning of Debbie's report with Rick this Wednesday after supper, the 28th of February, 73.
Did you want to
know? No, I.
McGee gave him a sort of a negative statement, a straw man, you see, that museums aren't dusty, dark places like they used to be, where lines of reluctant children file through. Now that's I got to thinking about it. They want this cultural experience, and it's a very nice little idea. And you see, they'll pick up this this cape, a cloak, that's 2,000 years old, and show how it was made and where they got to die for it. And it's you see, and it's the cloak is not the object. Cloak is just the occasion for the people who are listening or taking part in that little program, you see, to better understand something or other. I don't know what it is. You see, they got that anthropology mixed into it. You don't know what they want you to understand. Black people, it's certainly not individuals. It's just black people understand yellow people and ancient people understand modern people. It's all peoples. And when they call it the People's Center, what they mean is that it's the People's Center, the center of Haitians and Cubans and Latins and Teutons. You see, that anthropology. Then at the end, they make McGee and Joe Gagliola never make any contact with the thought that he's working with. At the end, Joe says, and you can actually touch it. Oh, that's fine. Mm-hmm. If you're just passing around something for the children, that's sort of childlike, I'd say, just to touch. The saying, what good does that do? They had myrrh and frankincense. Well, they could learn to spell it if they wanted to. I had to look it up.
by that time, Leslie was just hysterical over here. He just was holding his side and Gallic was trying to make it crystal clear.
Yeah.
And we haven't sent a copy of that to Leslie yet.
No, you've got it. I've lost in touch. I can't get into it. I appreciate it, but I can't put it down anymore. Start with, I left out all the cultural experiences. I just put a note in saying they had one. And then I thought, well, I'll stick them in. And that's where I made the that's too much and I can't handle it. That one about the cloak is just about that long. And then the long one is about the myrrh and frankincense. Well, they take Matthew, you see, and that's the gifts of the Magi, and they are putting interest on the footnote, sort of. That's not what the Magi are interested in, for a frankincense. So now there's your anthropology again. Almost like if we could hang together a little while, that we could. That's one thing we could do. We could look at a few statements like that and work them out. Now I've forgotten what I was going to say. Well, you're the one that's been places.
Miss Debbie has.
Well, Mr. Nealon wasn't there again today because he had to go do some planting at the garden club. So we had each other all to each other. I think that I've sort of been looking at Miss Nealon in the wrong way, and all of us have too. We've said on several occasions out here that. Just look at that. How in the world did Mr. Nealon, that country bumpkin, go up there and get that Barnard graduate? Well, I think it's the other way around. I think had that Barnard graduate attach herself to that little whiz of a forester. And she's the first to admit it. She's the first one to say that he's the one that's done things, you know. And maybe that... was what bothered me a little bit about her clubs when on Monday. Well, I'm not so bothered about her clubs anymore because I think she really did things beyond just holding offices and being on committees, although she did a lot of that too. But I asked her about the conservation. I have their whole bibliography. I just asked her which magazines they took, and she went and got out her income tax and read off all the organizations that they'd contributed to, and so all the magazines that they get and read. Oh, I have all of them. Straight from the income tax form. But I asked her about conservation because in the 30s she was state conservation chairman for the garden club, and so I asked her what she did specifically, and she said, well, she used to go around to the elementary schools and give talks to the children and try to get the children interested in nature. She said, it was very simple what I did. I just went to school and they could either go to recess or come and listen to me talk. And I'd just talk to them about shells and birds, and I'd try to get them to bring things in. I tried to start a museum in the school and have each child bring in something like a shell or a bird's nest or leaves or insects or something, so that they could all look at it and all talk about it and all be interested in nature. She said, all I was trying to do was to get the children to pay attention to nature, and then I tried to do the same thing with the women in the garden club. She said each one of the circles had a conservation chairman, and I used to meet with them every month, and I would give them assignments about conservation, things that they should try to do. I asked her about three times what those assignments were, and she didn't get terribly specific because she she got off on the laws to protect trees in Florida, the redbud and the dogwood and the holly trees. And apparently the garden club was the one that made that law very specific as to which trees were protected. It was originally the Federated Women's Club that passed the law in Tallahassee, while the garden club in the 30s got together with some University of Florida horticulturists and set down the scientific names and specifically which trees, specifically which holly trees are protected by law. And she said that in the last couple of years, they've also expanded that law to include things like sea oats, seashore plans. That it's against the law to cut down sea oats now. And another law that they spearheaded was billboards, the billboard law in Florida, saying that billboards have to be back a certain number of feet from the highway and they have to be a certain size, and you can't pin political little flyers on trees. That's against the law, too. Yeah. And I said, oh, well, then you must have gone to Tallahassee with getting these laws through. How excited. And she said, well, no, that her committee was the committee that got the information together, but they had another committee, the legislative committee, that took it to Tallahassee. So she didn't actually go to Tallahassee with it, but she was involved in getting the bill, making it specific as to which trees were protected. So I enjoyed that because I thought that it showed her being a little more active than just being in the garden club and being president and running the short course, which just involved collecting fees, and that wasn't, you know, really. But I said, I asked her what, in all those magazines, I said, well, which ones do you read the most, and which, you know, what do you like? And she said, oh, well, she tried to read as many of them as she could. She knew there were so many. Then the list is about 10 or 12 nature magazines. I had no idea that there were so many. They support, there's an organization in New York that is trying to stop Con Edison from building an electric plant on the Hudson River and polluting the Hudson River, and they support it, and they get all the literature from that. I mean, it's mostly Mr. Neeland who's the impetus in this. She says, everything that I know about nature, I know from Louie, from Daddy, she calls him. And so that's why I think we ought to reverse the statement that we made before. It's not that he's a country bumpkin marrying this Barnard graduate, it's the other way around. But and we got back to the farm in Flagler County, too, for a while. And, and I found out about Brother Fred. She tells some wonderful, I've forgotten the transition. Anyway, we got, oh, I know, she was talking about, I said, what do you read? Do you like the wildlife or do you like the plants? And the plants. She, before we leave the garden club, she told me about plants, too. I asked her, I thought maybe she could tell me how to take care of plants or something, and then I would see her doing things rather than just being in the club. And I said, do you work in the garden? And she said, well, no, she didn't, because that she thought that was Daddy's province, that she just took up the slack if he couldn't do it for some reason. But she worked in the house with potted plants, and I said, oh, well, it must be easier to have potted plants. I didn't know. It must be easier to grow potted plants. I mean, they're right there, and you can control the water and everything. She said, oh, no, it's much harder. She said, it's just twice as hard to grow a potted plant as it is to grow a plant outside. With a potted plant, it's an artificial environment. And the plant is sort of in a state of shock a lot of the times because its roots hit the side of the pot. And you've got to be very careful to feed it enough and water it enough. And she said, you've just got to feed plants. If people just would feed their plants, everybody comes and says, looks at our hollyhocks that are growing over the top of the house, and they say, why are your hollyhocks so high, and why do they have all those flowers? She said, if people would just fertilize And she said, you have to look at every plant as an individual. Everyone. She said, they're just like children or anything. You look, you watch them and you see what they need, and then you give it to them. Some plants need more water than others. Some plants need sun. Some plants need more fertilizer. Some plants need wind. She went on at this, and she said, it doesn't matter about what species it is. It could even be individual plants in the same species need different things. She said, I have two coleus plants out there in the kitchen. One of them drinks every day, and the other one only drinks once a week, and they're the same plant. It's the same kind of plant in two different pots. She said, they're just like people. You just watch them, and you know what they need. When their leaves droop, you water them. She said, I watch my plants all the time. Now, that's a potted gardener there. You just watch them. Well, so then I asked her whether she...
That's what you want to know about her, too,
right? Yes, I wanted to see her doing something like that. Exactly. And so then I asked her what she read in the magazines, you know, whether she was more interested in plants like her husband or whether she liked the wildlife. And she said, oh, she just read just about everything. She said, as long as there's something wild to save, I want to save it. It's cute. And she said that then that got us back to the farm in Flagler County, because she said, do you know that when we were in Flagler County, we had wild ducks? They got them from McIntosh, from that man in McIntosh. What was his name?
Geese.
Yes. They got a pair of wild ducks and raised them in the yard. She said they were just big pets. Their first clutch was 13 eggs or something. She knew exactly how many eggs it was. And she said, I used to wake up in the morning and I'd walk into the kitchen and my feet would hit the floor and quack, 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 the ducks would come. They were pets. And so she said, so I'd go out, I'd take my grain in a bucket and I'd go out and I'd pick up one duck under one arm and one duck under the other, and all the rest of them would be all around under my feet. And I'd go out to the pump to feed them, because they're wild ducks and they eat in the water normally. So she'd pump water out of the pump and make a big puddle in the yard and pour their grain into the puddle so that it would be wet when they ate it, instead of just feeding it to them dry. She said, we had ducks for 10 years. We had these wild ducks, and they were just the pets of the whole neighborhood. She said, when we moved to Trenton, we couldn't take them with us. And she said, everybody on all the farms around wanted a pair of wild ducks for their yard. And she said, oh, it was too bad, really, because they didn't last too long. Nobody took care of them. Nobody took trouble to put their seed in water or anything like that. So they didn't last too long. And I said, the only thing that I could came to my mind about wild ducks was Marjorie Rawlings having wild ducks. Only Marjorie Rawlings had wild ducks to eat them. So I said to Mrs. Nealon, did you ever eat any of the wild ducks? Is that why you have them? Well, she sort of drew up and she said, oh no, they were our specials. They were their pets. Well, then she talked about, she got off on the other animals on the farm. She said, she wanted to know if I had anything to do with the animals out here. And I said something about, oh well, you know, I sort of played around with them. And then she said they had mules. They had two mules. And I asked her if she had any horses, and she said no, they had mules, and nobody ever rode those mules. One of them threw Louie over the fence one time, and nobody ever rode those mules. She said that the only thing about those mules was that they were so gentle with the children. She said one day she was outside working in the garden, and all of a sudden she realized she didn't hear the kids, and she thought, oh, that's a bad sign, something's wrong. So she went hunting for them, and she found them down in the field with the mules, and they were playing Ring Around the Rosie, running under the mule's stomachs. You know, these little boys running around the mule's front legs under his stomach. She said, if that mule had moved, you know, it would have been too bad for my little boys. And then she said another time, she went down to the barn, and she found one little boy swinging on the mule's tail, basketball. She said, I just never understood why those mules were so nice to those kids. She said, they sure weren't nice to me. She said, one morning I woke up, and there they were out in the corn patch. The two mules had gotten out into the corn patch, and she said, I knew I couldn't leave them there. She said, I didn't have my hair put up in her hair. She said, my hair came down to my waist. Well, I didn't think that anybody should be seen in public with their hair down. But I knew I had to get those mules out of the corn, so I went tearing out of the house with my hair flying behind me, and I went chasing those mules all around the corn patch. Said I chased them for half an hour, and they just kept going around and around and around and around. And finally, she said, finally they decided they'd had enough, and they just turned around and trotted to the barn. Well, then she said I sometimes I was a little nervous around some of the big animals. She said, especially that bull. I said, which bull? She said, you haven't heard the story of Forking the Bull? And I said, oh yes, I've heard that story. She said, well, he lived with us for a while. Because they bought him and took him to Flagler County to breed in with the cattle around there. And someone else was keeping him, and Mr. Nealon saw that they weren't taking care of the bull, that he was getting thin. So he took the bull to his place to take care of it and get it fat again. She said, I don't trust a bull. She said, I just don't trust a bull. Well, Louis was gone one weekend. He had to go way up to the Alabama border, and he wasn't there, and I had to feed the bull. She said, I went out, I had the feed in my hand, and I got around the corner of the barn, and there was the bull standing there watching me. And I thought, I can't let him know I'm scared. I can't let him know I'm scared. And so she said, I just walked up there and put the feed down and walked back, and I just didn't let him know I was scared, and he didn't do anything to me. And I thought, well, I'll get him tomorrow morning. I'll go around the other way, around the other side of the barn, and come up behind him. So the next morning she goes out with her little bucket of feed and walks around the other side of the barn, just gets to the corner. There's the bull. She said, well, I just couldn't let him see I was scared. And his name, she knew his name. His name was some fantastic name like Prince Lanier Tormentor or something like that. It was about this long. She told it to me. This old Jersey bull. But she can't.
And Fred.
Fred. Yes. I knew there was something I couldn't wind down yet. Well, I said something about, I just was direct, and I said I was really interested in those brothers of Mr. Nealon's. I said that they all felt the same way about the land. I kept going back to that. And she said, oh, yes, they all did. And I said, they were all pretty outspoken. Oh, yes, she said, Daddy is outspoken sometimes. And I said, yes, and that oldest brother, what was his name, Fred? And she said, oh, yes. And I said, yes, he got kicked out of the university, didn't he, for being outspoken? And she said, kind of pursed her mouth up a little bit. She said, well, it wasn't really the university. And I said, oh, what was it? She said, well, he was working for the university. He was working as a citrus inspector. He had gone through that two-year program. And agriculture, and the university hired him, like they hired Mr. Nealon, to inspect citrus. And I said, and they asked him to leave. Well, yes, she said they did. And I said, well, what was it? Did he get in a fight with a professor or something? And she said, well, no, it was right before World War I, and he spoke out against what the United States was doing in Europe. Or she said she wasn't sure. But what he said, Mr. Nealon would probably know. But apparently they thought he was unpatriotic, and they told him to leave. She said that it's because they're German. The Nealons are German. Their mother was German. And she said that there was so much prejudice against the Germans. And she said, did you know there was a family in Gainesville? A German family in Gainesville. He was a dentist. And it was so bad for him before World War I that he had to leave town. And I know that because I talked to the woman who bought their dining room suite. You talk about giving the bibliography and sources. But that was the reason that Fred Fred didn't hold his peace about being German. She said, you know, there's just one thing you have to remember about German people. And I said, what's that? She said, they're flat-footed. And I said, what? She said, they're just flat-footed. And they usually get the left foot before the right.
Oh, damn it.
She said, Louis is outspoken, too. He just barges right in. But I think he's learned. He's been in public life, and I think he's learned that you just can't do that. The way to do is to go in and live the way they live, and then you can say something if you want to change it. But you don't just walk in and say you're going to change something.
She must have had a whole lot of experience with Louis.
So I said, the younger brother was an actor. And she said, yes, but she thought he'd acted out in California. He'd been in amateur productions. And she said, did you know Daddy was in a play too?
Oh.
He was in a show, she called it. I said, don't tell me. No, he was in a show. She said, yes, that was before I knew him in Flagler County. He was in some amateur little theater group. He said, and he played the absent-minded professor. And don't we know there are absent-minded professors? She said to me. I said, do tell.
Let me tell you, this picture of Louis in his prime, that I can't find it now.
Oh, in the...
In one of those articles?
In the article.
Yes, wherever it is.
Right there.
That's not as good as the other one. But that's good enough. That's good enough.
Well, you all been telling me how...
The other one is rich. I forget just where it is. Do you remember?
It's in the other magazine. Turn to the magazine.
That's good. But
it's the same picture.
Is it?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I
it's
see.
Just the other way.
Transposed,
oh,
that's all.
Well, that is me. You look at that.
My goodness.
And then
you
this
talk
one's
about
a little clear.
That's
you
Mr.
talk about a picture. Help.
Well, you all been saying that he was.
Gee whiz.
All
well, anyway, he was in this play, and he played the absent-minded professor. And she said, you know, that stuck with him in Flagler County the whole time he lived there. People used to think he was absent-minded because of this role that he played. She said they always said, oh, that's Mr. Neeland, he's absent-minded. She said one day he'd gone into the store in town to buy some bananas to bring home for supper, and walked out and forgot to pay for them. And he remembered in the middle of the day that he needed something else from the store. So he went back to the store, and they saw him coming, and they said, oh, he's come to pay for the bananas. Well, he hadn't. He'd come to get something else. And so they told him he needed to pay for the bananas, and so he did. And as he walked out, the clerk just shook her head and said, he's absent-minded, you know.
Now, according to that little article, he had two stints there. The first one of 2 or 3 years,
mm-hmm.
and then an interruption of 2 years, and then he went back to 1930.
Yep.
As county agent.
That's right.
Now, he didn't tell us that. He had 3 years there as county agent, and then the state forester people took him over as a line runner.
Well, that's in
mm-hmm.
1930. That happens, according to this article.
Yes, yes.
And that does make it about 10 years that he's there in Flagler County, farming and being county agent, off and on.
Oh, yes. Well, by George, that's it. No, he...
Because he's in the service until 1919.
Yes.
Then he goes to Flagler County.
Yes, but he doesn't stay very long. He goes right to the university.
That's when they first come. He's in the university from 1913 to 1915,
oh, yeah.
I think.
Oh, yeah,
then
right.
He goes into the service.
1917.
Yes, because then he works for 2 years as the extension foreman. Then he goes into the service. Then he goes back to Flagler County and is county agent off and on for a period of about 10 years. And in 1930, he goes to work for the Forest Service doing fire lines.
Oh, yes. He came in 1910.
Uh-huh.
And then he goes to university for 2 years,
mm-hmm.
and then he's 3 years extension farm foreman. That's 5 years, isn't it?
Yes, five.
Yeah,
and then he's in the service. He's in the Navy for 2 years.
Now that 2 years not accounted for.
1910 to 1912?
Yeah.
Well, he's probably just working on the farm with his parents then.
Well, the impression I got was he just, pretty soon after he got there, no, he said though that they dug those dumps out.
And she said that he hewed the farm out of the wilderness.
Well,
she says that.
Well, he didn't do that and go to university at the same time, did he?
Mm-mm.
Well, that's a couple of years then before he goes to the university.
Yeah. When he's just working.
Yeah. You know, it's a queer thing that they would buy. I guess they did that. That land didn't cost much. Mm-hmm.
That's like she was saying, all those bachelors in Flagler County came down and would buy a little bit of land.
10 acres
mm-hmm.
of land.
Yeah, probably just probably could almost squat on it.
Well, that'll do it then. And then he comes back and he's county agent.
Mm-hmm.
And then for 2 years he's something else, and then he comes back until 1930. Yeah, and then they go to Trenton. That's in the state forestry. Then he has 3 years.
Wait a minute, that's not right. She said, well, it's not what she told me anyway. Because I believe she told me that they went to Trenton in 27. And then to Gainesville in 32? I think that's right.
That's what you said.
He says right here, between stints of operating his own farm in Florida, he served as county agent in Flagler County. Oh, this is just the county agent. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But that says it.
Yeah.
They wouldn't have gone to Trenton if he was still county agent until 1930 in Flagler County. They wouldn't have gone to Trenton. That's not in Flagler County. So that's...
Oh, Trenton's
over. I know. It's
yeah.
in Alachua County, isn't it? It's just right over here. Oh.
On past Newberry.
He was county agent in Flagler County from September in 21 to 23, and then again from 25 to 30.
Yeah.
That is.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe he got fired and it stuck for a while.
Huh?
Maybe he got fired and it stuck for a while.
Yeah.
He was getting fired all that time.
Well, that's Fraser.
That was just a news article.
Oh, is that a news article?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, that land use thing took him over the state.
Mm-hmm. That was after the fire line plowing. And then he started to work as extension forester.
When was that? 37?
The extension forester? Well, he retired in 57, and then it was 19 years. So that makes it, 38. That's right.
So he lived in Gainesville then as...
that traveling job as land use planning.
That was 3 years. And then the state forest, that lion business.
They must have been in Trenton then.
Well, we'll find out from him time to time. We'll pin him down. He doesn't say it right, we'll say it, and I'll let you hear what this fellow says. That's right. Now, German.
He's German and Norwegian. His father's Norwegian and his mother is German. Nealand is Norwegian. And I said, Miss Nealand, I thought that he was Scotch because she's always talking about the Scotch brogue that he imitates. And she said, oh no, Nealand isn't Scotch. And I said, well, I didn't think it was, but you talked about how he imitated that accent. She said, well, that's just something that he's picked up. This was back to this acting business, you know, that he'd been in the show. She said, he just couldn't do it to a T, she said. Oh, first time in my entire life I ever heard anybody say pshaw.
Oh?
Oh, really?
She said it about 3 times this afternoon. Like Miss Mary sang hit. I never heard anybody say it before.
Oh, really?
She said it about his accent. Pshaw, she said. Or she doesn't really pronounce the P. She just says shaw. But she's the first to admit that, I mean, she's very modest about what she does. And maybe she's overly modest, and you don't get a picture of how much she actually does do because of that. But I have had the feeling after this afternoon that she backs him up, that what she knows she's learned from him, and she's doing the same things that he's doing, but not in such a crusading and pioneering way. She's doing it in clubs and organizations. But she said it at one time. Oh, she got off on how many divorces there are today, and I don't know how we got on that, but I said, yes, wasn't it too bad? And then she said she thought that 2 people could do more in society than just 1, but she thought it was so silly that people thought that they couldn't do something by themselves. But she thought 2 people could do more, and I thought to myself, that sort of backs up this idea that I was getting, that she's backing him up. And that he's the light.
Well, you know, the big thing that you haven't had is this reporting that we do out here. You need to hear someone report on this Nealand, on this Nealand. Someone who's known him, you see, all this time. You see, we don't know anything about him.
That's
he
right.
Picks up from the essay. Hmm. And what we need to do is talk to people who've known him. And they can tell us things, you see, that a little different way that he wouldn't tell.
Yes.
You know, wouldn't.
Well, I'll talk. I can talk to my friend Warner Fraser.
Well, he don't write like he talks very well, does he?
Well,
he don't write like a man of information. Well, you can see.
Can I ask him who else knows Mr. Nealand?
Yeah.
People on the staff, if they're still there. I wouldn't think they would be, though.
Well, Fraser is the one who wrote this article.
These old kind of agents.
Write to them. But they, you wouldn't, what would you get back in a letter?
Hmm. He was a nice guy.
He wouldn't get, I mean, that's what these letters being written at the time of his retirement, first of all, killed
well,
him right
bound,
off.
Somebody's bound to know him around here. He's lived in Gainesville for more so long.
Mm-hmm. The Garden Club, all those clubs he's belonged to, he's got a pretty good contact.
We just bound to it.
Sure.
I don't know anybody.
Well, we can ask around. I know. I can ask around people in town who know the Nealand.
I find out the entomologist and the pathologist he associates with in forestry. They come out and look at his work for him.
Yeah.
Because I'm pretty sure that the entomologist would still be on the staff.
Mm-hmm.
Well.
And he named a Dr. Ziegler, who recommended him for the Society of American Foresters.
Yeah.
I don't know if he's still on staff or not.
I never get much information from the academic world. If they have it, keep it. Well, now you see, she's reporting on her experience with pots. You see, now that's how you ought to learn about pots. You see, she's done it for years and years and years. Mm-hmm. Now that's where that's nice. And see, those colliers, one of them drinks every day and one every once a week. Now that's that's where to learn. Somebody who already has experience. Now that's what I say about the. Seminars up here. You see, they run them in the crummiest possible way. They let the members of the class they just report in turn, and they don't know anything they're talking about. There is no possible way to learn in those seminars. Not the way they're done now, and that's the way they did in Vanderbilt. Shabby there too, as I think of it now. And I used to think every now and then, well, if this bird would just go ahead and line it out a little bit himself and tell us kind of what the situation is. About old Ben Johnson or somebody. And not have to probe it all out yourself. That is shabby. Now, you see, what I would like, you see, for these writers that I use the most, I don't know too much about them, but these fellows up here, you see, they know all this and know. They've got all the bibliography, and they, you see, use it all the time. They could, what you'd want to do, you don't want to do your thing and all like that. You just want to sit there and listen to them. And then take it home and think it over and go back and raise a few little points. Just to get straight what they're telling you. Or it's that graduate instruction is, it's poor. They all do the same. Everywhere you go. Sits back and lets the class do the work. And they don't know a damn thing about it. And you can't possibly learn anything that way. You just can't possibly. All I know about any of those people is what I've picked up myself. I don't know much from the bibliography. It's just amusement. Every now and then you get some little article you can use. One book on Emerson. It's wrong. But it's informative. You get a lot of straight information. But it's scoop on. No one I've ever seen. So you're lucky if you can find somebody who'll talk who can report on it subject and will. You're lucky, lucky, lucky. And that's so satisfying. So satisfying.
And she seems to enjoy it.
Yes, we have a good time, I think.
Well, now you see, why do you need to take a course when you can talk to people like that? I mean, straight of it. You get less in the course. You weren't talking to Neelan.
No, that's right. She said, are you taking any classes? And I said, well, no, at the university. And I said, well, no, I wasn't.
That was way over there hot. Why did you tell me that thing was
warm? I said, oh, I was just reading a little bit. Oh, what are you reading? She said, and I said, well, and I just muttered around, and I said something like American literature. Capital A, capital L. And she said, who wrote it? Washington Irving. She goes off on Washington Irving, and how Washington Irving, she said, you know, no American writers have ever measured up. Look at Washington Irving. to write like Edison, and he never got there. And all I could remember about Washington Irving was Ichabod Crane, and I get the two confused anyway.
Yes, you just don't think fast when it comes to those things.
What should I have said?
You ought to say what she wants to read. And not get a not divert her over into American literature. You ain't reading any American literature, aren't you? Anyhow.
Well, now, see, she'd understand.
And old Shropshire Lad, and what Mary Lou do you read?
Faulkner?
What Faulkner do you read? The Bear.
The Hamlet.
Yes. Well, you want to read Future Shock. That would do it, you see. Tell her you're catching up on the Sierra Club. That you couldn't say that though, of course she'd catch you on that.
Sure would.
Oh, amazing.
Now, what else did she read?
The magazine.
That was the magazines. Oh, there's the Sierra Club and the.
I mean, she talked about them.
She she didn't know, which the reason that she brought up Washington Irving and Addison was that she used to have to write compositions like Addison when she was in school. And she said, oh, and another thing, when I went in, I sat down in Mr. Nealon's green chair, and her red chair is over on the other side of the room. Well, she didn't go to sit on her red chair right away. She sat on a dining room chair like this and just sat on the end of it, and I sat in the green chair, and I said, well, Mrs. Nealon, won't you be uncomfortable there? Well, we don't need to sit like this. And she said, oh, I don't mind. When I was in school, we had to sit up straight. If we didn't sit up straight, the teacher would come along and hit us on the shoulder so we'd sit up straight. She said, you know, it's a shame people don't do that anymore in school. Why, these children have terrible posture. Oh, well, square your shoulders, Daddy. Talk about being starchy.
Now, when's she going to come out here and let us all hear a little bit? First day he goes somewhere, she can come out here, couldn't she?
Yes, oh yeah. She has meetings a couple days a week.
Oh, does she?
Mm-hmm. She had a meeting this morning.
Oh.
She told me she might not be back by 2 o'clock. I wasn't to come until 2:30 because she might not be back.
Oh, really?
Yes, it depends on
how
long the speakers take. Well, the trouble is that crazy meeting is where she got to talking to somebody about the divorce rate. So,
Well, I'm glad to know it's the pot plant that she.
She can do them all.
Yeah.
That's a nice about feeding the plants, so those hollyhocks.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, and Mr. Nealon said that his plants are just coming right along. They're gonna he's got.
I want to see that place. Was it just a little regular thing around the duck pond, one of those little houses such as they have over there?
Mm-hmm.
And the streets cut off most of the yard. It's too bad.
Got shingle. It's some kind of cedar shingle that's fairly, pretty unusual. Because she said that the historic Gainesville people had been by about the house because of the shingling. It's got red shingles.
Right in that area, that could really be pretty, except most of the houses, the area is kind of overbuilt to begin with, and then most of the houses were turned into apartments. And by students, so they're are pretty run down now. I know right next to him is the biggest ramshackle house in Gainesville. It's old, and it looks like two or three houses stuck together. It's the funniest little thing. And it must have 10 mailboxes on it.
Oh, yeah. Aren't they on the corner?
Mm-hmm.
You look right at the recreation center from their house. You know, next to Kirby Smith School.
Yeah.
You're standing in front of the recreation center and look back. You look into their front yard. They're just across the street.
Kirby Smith.
It's the white school on.
It's not far from the town hall, is it?
No, it's just.
Oh, they're right off university.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. 3 blocks.
Oh, and she told me they were draining the duck pond too. We got to talking about well, we talked about what they grew on the farm, and she said that they used to plant cowpeas, to for the soil, and that one year they had Mediterranean fruit flies, and the officials were coming around and they were going to cut down Louie's patch of cowpeas. And so she went out and she said, no, please don't cut them down until my husband comes home, please, because I don't think you should be cutting these down. I don't think that the fruit flies are in these plants. And so they waited, and Mr. Nealon came home and somehow convinced them not to cut down his cowpeas. But that got us into things contaminating, like insects contaminating or plants or something like that. If you carry across state lines, she said when they bring the soil back from California, they've been stopped for bringing the dirt back. And she said that the duck pond in Gainesville has been infested. Someone planted, just found a pretty plant out in the woods somewhere and thought it was pretty and stuck it in the duck pond, and it took over. And they're having to drain it now to try to kill whatever it is.
And grows on the bottom.
Grows on the top. That's all green. It looks like a yard.
Well,
I drove fast. You can't see the water, and there's not much water in it now. The ducks are still there. They're paddling around in these little puddles.
Yeah, it'd be certainly be nice. Someone to talk to. Now, my friend over there, Wally Hodge, his wife, she has been associated with Mr. Nealon since they came. They came pretty soon after I did.
Oh, that's right.
So they know a good bit.
She talks well, too.
Yeah.
Good.
I don't get around it enough to. We could ask Mr. Nealon, who'd know you, bud? We want somebody who'd know you. The bandana still hanging on?
Yeah. Still there.
Just like that, ever since you left?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, gee whiz.
It wasn't windy today.
Well, one of the first things she told me over the telephone, of course, that you say she fired it, she said, she would like very much to have come by and visit. But she says, you know, Louis is a star performer.
Well, now you going out and write some French for a while?
After 8 o'clock,
I don't know.
Uh, at what you did on Miss Mary. From over there.
Well, what I said was that they all were in on what I was not in on. It was that Virgil business, Miss Mary and Shirley and everybody. And so they had a good laugh at my expense, but not maliciously. And in the Molière play, the little woodcutter's wife and the audience know what's happening to him, but he doesn't know, and he never knows. And in the end of the play, tells her, she comes to take him home again. She's been trying to teach him a lesson, and she comes to take him home, and he says that, well, she better watch out now because she's married to a famous doctor. So all I said was that idea some people knowing what's going on and therefore seeing the whole thing a little more clearly and laughing more about it. That's all I meant. Farce?
No. Of laughter as a cure of follies of the age. Now that's the ridicule.
Well, then it doesn't stand up with Miss Mary.
Well, you have the laughter. It's not what they call ridicule or laugh at the follies is not the sort of laughter of Miss Mary. It doesn't have to be hearty laughter. It's mental. Laughter, you see, to correct the follies of the time. Now, she has that sense of the ridiculous. That's that's why you're just going to have to see her and Louise Graham together. Just have to. Louise Graham she's a fool. You can hear it clear across the barn light. She's all about talking. Ooh. Now, you see, when Miss Mary goes over there, she doesn't stay long. She'll stay half a day, and that'd just be your speed. Once you go there, you won't be satisfied like you're back. I would, too.
Yep, that ridiculous guy. That just tickled them to death. And Virgil sleeping 9 months, you see, that's just, they hinge their stuff on that. He might come out.
Yeah.
And then that tombstone.
Yeah, now you see, he don't come out and stay a little longer.
Yeah.
And that's, you see, the whole thing is ridiculous. classical thing is good humor. That's what Pope talks about, the rape of the lock. It's the bad part of it is after Belinda loses her sense of humor and has a spleen, she gets mean. That's the point of the rape of the lock. But as long as they take it, you see, with a sense of humor, that's all right. Now, I don't know just how to. I've not been interested in it, you see, but you'd have to. This would take you into it, you see. Those pranks that they're all so fond of. Seems so simple-minded, but it's not, you see. I think that's the mentality that you're interested in, and what you said, you pretty well take that for granted. That's what you mean when you say it. I'd look at it just a little at a time. I'd write a preface on that. You see, you can look back over it and see how slow, what little cues you had, big cues all the time, that you didn't see. And you still didn't see them, you see. And it wasn't that they weren't there, you see. Or that people were new to you. It was a wholly, almost a complete lack of comprehension of the people themselves.
Shirley says, "Ooh, I have somebody for you to meet. Timmy's home from school."
You don't have to relate the whole thing again, but you can pick out the parts like that.
Debbie said, I thought, well, Timmy's just 10 years old, as I remember, but she said I was polite.
I thought, mothers are usually proud of their sons. Then we start playing, Timmy leaves. He sets up the balls and leaves.
Debbie? Out here now, Miss Guthrie, she has stomped my feet many times. And if she says something to me, you see, then I don't want to do it. I say, now, Miss Guthrie, who in the hell do you think I am? Just going to run around here every little thing you say? As long as you talk loud and screw up your face, you know, like Mr. Nealon, they don't get mad at you. You see, she got to get the man of the countryside, see?
We've almost got Rick for you. Looks like a country bumpkin. We worked hard on that.
Yeah.
Rick worked hard on that. His clothes.
Well, you can't do it all at one time, you see. You're going to have to shovel a few potatoes. You see, you're too light on your feet. You're still a little light on your feet, you see. You don't look like them. You don't act like them. You look at Shirley. She walks like I do. She just slouches along with those big shoes.
A little bit slosh along with.
Yeah. Heavy on her feet, you see. Yeah.
Miss Mary say Virgil doesn't cut his hair or his beard. It's just down to here and out like this. I said, it's like it. Oh, no, it's all cut now.
Since when, Miss Mary? Now, I'll tell you what I'd do, David. I'd think up something. I'd say to Miss Mary, I'd say when I went over there, I said, you all have been misinforming me. You have just got me expecting the wrong thing. You talking about these shaggy fellas, looks like a bear. Why, he looked like he just come from the barber shop.
That's right.
I just didn't know what to think about it. You just get things all crossed up. I don't know what to think.
Oh,
just get after her. Get
she
after her. Oh, yes. And you can do Shirley the same way. We'll get her. Bye, we got over.
Virgil's probably got a sister.
He does. Tina. She's all of 15. But Cross Creek, that's nothing. Annie Bachwright was only 14 when she turned up on Miss Mary's doorstep pregnant.
She's beautiful.
I bet she is.
Yes, she is.
Yes, she is. There's two of them. I forget who they are. And Bonnie, that's three. Bonnie is very attractive to the girl, but the other two in particular.
Tina is really pretty.
Oh, yes.
You saw
her
at the picnic. You might not remember her.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He's going to go with me.
So that's not going to help you out, eh? We'll have to introduce this marriage. Hey, then. Oh, shoot. That was good. I enjoyed it.
Do you think there's anything in this scrapbook to Xerox?
I don't think so.
I don't either.
Exactly.
I thought Rick wanted to look at it, so. Are you through with it?
Look at it tonight, Debbie. I'm already squint-eyed, that burn it.
I
enjoyed that. be frustrated. You're looking at it, and that's the thing. But now if you had that little trouble, wouldn't it be? Wouldn't it be nice? Oh yeah, I'll tell you, there's nothing like that report. To do it or hear it. You see, it's unfolding. You know it. It doesn't seem to be so informative, but that's because it's not labored. And you see, the people who don't handle information very much, they want it to seem labored. They don't have much in it. I'll tell you, one of the finest examples of that is in Cross Creek. It's in a piece that really doesn't belong in it. It's not written in the same way. It's more sort of halfway academic. It's a piece about going looking for rattlesnakes with Ross Allen. Mm-hmm. And that is gifted. Now you talk about it. And Bigelow wrote the book on that. He didn't pay attention to that. He don't realize how gifted that is. He's not interested in it, in that side of it. You talk about the minor forms, like we're talking about, you know? You see, it's got those little pets to start with, like the coral snake, and at the end, as her special friend, after she came to understand it. and then on that trip with Ross Allen, you know, she seems to be sort of innocent about it all, but she's actually read up in the bibliography to get it control of it so she can do some writing for him. Except you don't know anything, you see. No experience is like the,
I don't know anything worth writing about.
No, I'm not quipping now. You don't have any experiences like the coral snake or the pink snake. It lay up there, looked out over the countryside. You don't have the experiences. But you could get them. That's rich. That is rich. I see. I don't have anything like that. Came down there to learn the country. And you see, what you do, you in the country, you never see the country, and you try to get as far from it as you can. Oh, that's the way things have changed. So that you don't really have control over all those things, except the way they go. much you can do. Everybody says they're innocent people, but they're not.
Thank you.
gee whiz, gee whiz.